Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Well, let's talk about Suns Lakers. You know, I would have voted Chris Paul MVP. How do the Suns look when Chris Paul is still playing but not 100%? They are not the same team. But let's talk about the Lakers, because if Chris Paul is not going to be 100%, now this series, there's a couple days off now. Suns-Lakers do not play until Sunday. That's great news for the Suns. Get an extra day off, get Chris Paul healthy. He's not there, and they're not the same team. But we all know LeBron's the leader. I talk about this all the time. The NBA is full of talent. There's not very many leaders. LeBron's the leader of the Lakers. And it's money in the bank. You get that leadership every night. But once again, you see who the Lakers are when Anthony Davis is aggressive. But you don't get that with Anthony Davis every night. So whereas LeBron is the team MVP most valuable, there's got to be some sort of bridge award for Anthony Davis. And I would say he is the team's MIP. He's the most impactful player. That third quarter was everything. Okay, 18 points, 5 rebounds, played every minute, and they blew Phoenix off the floor. Phoenix, good team. Phoenix, the 2 seed in the West. The superior conference, a 2 seed. Phoenix, good team. So LeBron's leadership and consistency, again, that's an automatic deposit. You get that every night. I mean, he'll have maybe 2 halves a year he doesn't play well. So you can always bank on LeBron's consistency and leadership. You get that every night. But when AD is aggressive, they not only beat teams, they crush good teams. I mean, DeAndre Ayton is a good young big. But AD had a crazy thing happen to his body. And I had a growth spurt in high school. I went from 5'7 to 6'2 over the course of a summer. I never forget my high school basketball coach. Oh, I got myself a quarterback. I got myself a shooting guard. Anthony Davis was 6'3 as a junior in high school. And then he was basically 6'11 as a senior. So Anthony Davis was a guard. And last night in the third quarter, you can see some of that guard come out. You can see that junior year of high school. For a big, he runs the floor better. He's more fluid. He can handle the ball better. He can put it on the deck and drive. He can pull up and shoot a jumper, pull back and shoot a three. That's where he is different than other bigs. And DeAndre Ayton's a really good young big. But AD just took over the game last night. There's nothing DeAndre Ayton can do. That you're talking about in baseball, they call it a 5-tool player. When a guy can run and hit and steal and power. And boy, when Anthony Davis is locked in, you are looking at a big that can do everything. He'll put it on the deck and take you to the basket. He'll drive right through the middle of the lane. He can pull back and hit a three. He can handle the ball, very comfortable, runs the floor, very fluid athlete. I mean, he hits the floor a lot. You ever notice that with AD? And that's Kevin Durant, too. Kevin Durant and AD get hurt a lot. They hit the floor a lot because they handle the ball so well. They're driving to the basket. Porzingis, by the way, for 7'6". Kind of a slasher at 7'6". Used to be a slasher with 6'7". Porzingis is a slasher at 7'6". So Porzingis and KD and AD, they hit the floor all the time because they're driving. And you got a lot of body. That's why nobody loves a 6'5 running back. You want a small guy that goes through, right? Don't want your legs too exposed. AD is big, and he's crashing to the floor all the time. But part of that is he grew up a guard and had a growth spurt. And so when you watch that third quarter last night, LeBron's the most valuable player. AD is the most impactful player. And if Chris Paul is not ready to go Sunday and at least 90-95%, this series is over. Frank Vogel after the game.
AD, even though he had, was dinged up with his knee and was a little bit hobbled, really committed to what worked for us in game two, which is really running the floor, being the first big down, putting pressure on their transition defense. And that opened up a lot of driving lanes for Brown, who mentally made the decision, to get downhill and just live in the paint and live at the rim. And he was dominant during that stretch. And, those two guys really reversed the whole course of the game.
Yeah, I thought the third quarter for the Lakers was the best they have played since last year in the bubble as a team. That was a great, great quarter of basketball. You're not going to get that every quarter in the NBA. You can't ask athletes to be all engaged and focused like that and play at that level for games. But third quarter was the difference in the game. So, listen, there's a million different reporters and a million different blogs. Everybody's got an opinion. I remember when I grew up, there was the media. And at the time I was a kid, I wasn't in the media. There was no talk radio. The fans only got a voice with a letter to the editor, a newspaper. That was it when I was like 15, 18. There was no talk radio. Fans didn't get an opinion. Now fans get an opinion everywhere. I could literally talk to our president on Twitter. You could talk to anybody you wanted. Tom Brady, Phil Mickelson, it's great. But there's also now, because everybody has an opinion, and there's so many media outlets. I didn't grow up. There was no Twitter, obviously. There was no social media. There was no such thing as blogs. When I was a kid, there was barely cable television. Media is everywhere. So it's important that, for me anyway, I'll just speak for me, there are just certain media I listen to, and it's a pretty small group of people I trust. Tom Curran in New England, we've brought him on this show, he's as good a local NFL reporter as the league has. When I used to live in Connecticut, when Tom talked, he broke stories, he was legitimate, he's not surfing for clicks, he knows his stuff, he's never hyperbolic, he just gives you the straight skinny, and a good reporter should be occasionally ticking off local people. That's the sign of a good reporter. If everybody loves you, you're a hack. If you're not ticking off local fans a little bit, you're not doing your job. And that's Tom Curran. So Curran comes out at OTAs. He said, I just finished watching Patriots' first OTA. One thing that stands out about Mac Jones' new quarterback is his size and lack thereof. Not just compared to Cam Newton. He's shorter than Jarrett Stidham. He really will need to fill out his frame as well. His arm isn't really live. You know, these are just observations relative to how far he may need to go. Fortunately, except for the height, the other things can improve. What did I bang on before the draft? Trust your eyes. You only have one chance to make a first impression in life. He looks tiny next to Cam. He's smaller than Stidham. Remember I kept saying, when Trey Lance walks into the 49ers, you're going to go, ooh, bro, that's a pro athlete. 6'4", 220, Justin Fields. I kept saying, Justin Fields walks into a camp. Even if he's not great at the line of scrimmage for a couple years, you're going to go, ooh, 6'4", big arm. That's a player. That's a baller. Mac Jones is the shortest of all the first-round quarterbacks. He's the least athletic. His arm is not close to a Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Zach Wilson, not close. Worst NFL body. That stuff made Instagram, right? That made social. Now, a Patriot player yesterday, Kendrick Bourne, said, oh, quote, he has a lot of swag and confidence. He is a leader. Yeah, so was Tim Tebow. And I heard that about Johnny Manziel had swag. And you could say that about Drew Locke. In the NFL, you need a gift. And the reason you need a gift is because the plays rarely go as they're designed. In fact, Nick Saban and Bill Belichick in their careers have struggled, not against all quarterbacks, but quarterbacks with a gift. Belichick struggled with Cam 3 times. Saban struggled with Johnny Manziel. Johnny, for all his faults, had a gift. He could move. Why do you need a gift? Because when the play breaks down, how do you escape? Lamar Jackson's got his legs. Russell Wilson's got his elusiveness. Cam and Big Ben had their size. Play breaks down, one guy can't take him down. Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers, the ability to escape and make any throw, sometimes not looking. The great quarterbacks have a gift that when the play, the line of scrimmage, a teammate runs the wrong direction, you can do something. You've got an ability to do something to save the play. And not only save it, often enhance it. Mac Jones, protection breaks down. Teammate runs the wrong route. Play screwed. That happens all the time. Protection breaks down 10 times a game of your 60 plays. Player runs a wrong route or he gets bumped out of his route. That happens in there 8-9 times. The running back can't block the oncoming linebacker, misses his assignment. Players trip, fall, held up. And so, you know, people can say, well, what about what's Brady's gift? Well, Brady played in a much more patient NFL when he broke in 20 years ago. You would give guys 2 and 3 years to develop. Tom didn't have a gift initially. Now, Tom did get drafted as a 6'4 and a half, 225-pound athlete. Tom Brady walks into a room, that's a big fella. Tom Brady, in every room he walks to in America, that's not a, like if he walks to a corporate event, if Tom Brady goes for a speaking engagement, if he is talking to advertiser, Tom's the biggest guy in every room. 6'4 and a half, 225. Peyton Manning, 6'5, 230. I've been at a party with Peyton Manning. He didn't know who I was at the time. Peyton Manning's huge. Peyton Manning doesn't look like the rest of us. I'm tall. I'm 6'2, 200 almost. Peyton Manning's way bigger than me. Head's bigger. His hands are bigger. His chest is bigger. His shoulders are bigger. Got to have a gift. Manning, it was the brain. I mean, that Peyton's probably the smartest player that's ever played the game. Probably the smartest single guy that's ever played the game. He changed the game. Brady was given time in a more patient era to develop into the best pre-snap guy the game currently has. Also, he's actually, you know, he was drafted by a baseball team. He's bizarrely elusive in the pocket. He's been doing it so long. So this is what I say about Mac Jones. This is why I said, you cannot draft him number 3. Now, the Patriots, to their credit, didn't give up any picks, didn't move up, just sat there at 15. So the Patriots deserve credit. They were not going to give away picks to get him. But this is why he can't go 3. Walk in the locker room, guys look around and go like, dude, that body, shirt off, that size, that arm. If Tom Curran says it, I believe it. And Tom Curran's probably getting heat today from Patriot fans. That's why he's good.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Now, there's a lot of different terms that if you don't use social media, and I don't use it enough to be too savvy, but you've been ratioed, that's geeky. And there's the flex. There's a term they use called flex. Ooh, you're flexing. And I think there is a difference between a flex and a reminder. So if I go to my social media and I take a picture of my house and the pool, that's a flex, right? That's obnoxious. But in the winter, if I just take a picture of the sunset, which anybody could take a picture of, it is a reminder to a company I used to work for in the middle of a blizzard. Uncle Colin made the right call. That's a reminder. I can be obnoxious. Tom Brady is hosting OTAs this week without the coaches. He wanted to do that in New England. They wouldn't let him. Tom Brady has made sure everybody in the world sees that Bruce Arians is allowing him to take Antonio Brown, Gronk, Mike Evans, anybody that wants to show up, Blaine Gabbert, players only OTAs. They can use the facilities, weight room, field. Bruce Arians says no coaches because Brady hates OTAs. It is not a flex by Brady here. It is a reminder. Just posting pictures on Instagram of the beautiful sunset to people who didn't understand you had that option instead of blizzards. Belichick would never allow this. Tom's not flexing. Tom's not, you know, lined up with a Super Bowl trophy in his hand. He's not showing you the rings in his room. He's not doing the standings. It's not a flex. It's a reminder by Tom Brady that all you had to do was occasionally, 2-3 times a year, say, hey, Tom, good job. Occasionally hit on a wide receiver in the draft. Let me control the OTAs with players and not have to go through coaching in meaningless OTAs as I've been the best quarterback in the league for the last 7 to 8 to 9 to 10 to 20 years. Big difference. That's not a flex. Tom at the OTAs is a reminder. Had the Patriots just been a little less rigid, They would not have a losing record. They would not be inferior in their own division to Buffalo. They would not have any chance to beat Kansas City. This little sunset picture. It's nice here, not nice where you're at.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Merriman, and I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Merriman. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, The Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Merriman on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you can get your podcast.
Everything happens for a reason. So yesterday, according to the Sports Business Journal, the ratings came out on Aaron Rodgers in Jeopardy. He is not the most popular. Ken Jennings, who was once a contestant, very popular, very good, a whiz. Ken Jennings' ratings beat him substantially. So when Ken Jennings was on, they got 10 million viewers. When Aaron was on, they got 9. Now, a million viewers is a lot. That's something in our business. And 22% of Jeopardy fans, they want Ken Jennings. And that's a lot. And then Aaron Rodgers, that was closer to 15%. On the same day, that came down. The Packers leaked it to the media that they're not budging on Aaron Rodgers' trade situation. Just wanted to double down on that. Everybody keeps telling me, oh, I heard an analyst at another network in a colder part of the country tell me, oh, Aaron's got all the leverage. Let's think about this. He's going to lose $50 million if he retires. He's lost the fan base in Green Bay. You hear that sports radio chatter. And now he lost leverage with Jeopardy. We also know that he sees and hears everything. We know that because Mark Schlereth put out just a singular tweet about Denver having interest in Aaron, and Aaron immediately DM'd Mark. That is not a criticism of Aaron. But he's not married with a bunch of kids. He's on that social device. He's good with social media. He hears and sees everything. And so, and I want you to just think about this for a second. Because I've said I think Green Bay did a lousy job communicating with him. But I remember reading this years ago from, it was a legendary comedian that 99% of you have never heard of, Jackie Gleason. In the 50s and 60s, he was the funniest guy in America, and he was like Tony Soprano, if Tony Soprano was funny. He was this just big, tough, everything. And I remember reading one time, he said, if you got power, you should never have to use it. It is unspoken. It is understood. Don't mess with that guy. So when Russell Wilson used his I'm disappointed muscle, I'm deeply disappointed muscle. It was really the first time Russell had ever used that muscle. And Seattle reacted immediately. Aaron has, he was Mr. Go Hawks for 8 years. Go Hawks, Go Hawks, Go Hawks, enough already. And then he exercised the I'm disappointed muscle. And the organization, Mr. Go Hawks, And they worked really quick to give him a deal and get him a better O-line. But Aaron now has exercised his I'm disappointed muscle a dozen times. So Green Bay is used to it, prepared for it. They dealt with it with Favre. They're over it. And now they have more leverage. Aaron doesn't have the leverage. That's why the way he wins this is by having the stomach to deal with it. Leverage is when you don't need a stomach. I got leverage. When you need a stomach to deal with something, that means you're getting blowback in places. So Aaron's going to lose money. He's already lost the fans, a big chunk of them. He looks like he's going to lose the Jeopardy job. And by the way, not only does Green Bay have his contract, they could franchise tag him for years. So for Aaron to come out on the side he wants to, it's all about, does he have the stomach for it? I don't think he does. I think he likes to be liked more than most athletes. I mean, everybody likes to be liked. You like to be liked. I like to be liked. Everybody likes to be liked. I mean, LeBron James said after that first year in Miami, I don't like being the villain. I don't want to be the villain. I smile when I play basketball. Magic Johnson didn't want to be a villain. I think sometimes Kobe and Michael Jordan kind of liked it a little bit, but you also like to be liked. I mean, Michael wanted his general manager to like him, right? He loved Phil Jackson because Phil Jackson liked him. He even liked Doug Collins, who got fired because Doug liked him. Michael wanted to be liked. We all want to be liked. That's why he did The Last Dance. He wanted to give you the documentary about his life so you'd watch and talk more. I don't know. I just look at this. And he's not retiring. We got to get over this. Aaron's not retiring.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
The NBA's never had more talent. Don't listen to anybody. It's got more good basketball players and more basketball talent than it's ever had, including the Michael Jordan era. And I'll just give me a minute on this. In the Michael Jordan era, it was a domestic league. There wasn't all these international players. Now you're searching the globe for all these players. And nutrition's better, training's better, coaching's better. The league's never had anything close to this kind of talent. 6'11 guys were clunky, back to the basket. You didn't want them shooting anything more than a free throw. Hell, guys moving out now, 7-foot guys shooting threes, international play. The league's never had more talent. But it's also never had less leadership. And I don't blame the players. It's the economics of the sport. Get to the pros. It used to be you would play high school for 4 years and you'd have this legendary high school coach and there was a culture and he would talk about leadership. He would mold you. And then you would go to college for 4 years and the college coach, you would see it. Sometimes you got to see it to be it. You learn. We all learn, right? How to be a parent, we watch our parents. How to be a leader, you watch a leader. So it used to be players would be in this great high school program with this old crusty coach who'd been winning for 30 years, but you sensed culture. And then you'd go to college and you kind of sensed, oh, then you go to the NBA and by 23, you're like, yeah, Tim Duncan was a leader. And Patrick Ewing was a leader. Well, because they'd seen it. Well, now it's AAU, which is mostly about that dude can play, let's bring him on the team. That's not about a culture. That's just get the best players. And then you spend 1 year in college, max. After my freshman year of college, I knew beer better than algebra. And nobody learns anything in 1 year of college. And then these guys come into the league and you're like, well, they're great players, but they lack leadership. There's about five guys in this league that I would say, oh, that's a great leader. Every team used to have several guys. Went to a great high school program 4 years. Went to a college program. Even the great players, Tim Duncan, Patrick Ewing. And they were in college for years. So a prime example is Devin Booker. Devin Booker is filthy talented. I mean, like, insane. But years ago, Scottie Pippen took over for Michael Jordan. Jordan went to baseball. And Scottie was a top 10 player in the league, but he didn't have the emotional makeup to be a number one. And some of it was, you know, when you're a number one, forget the media hovering over you every night. The other team focuses their game plan specifically to stop you. That's a lot. Do you make other people better? You will be asked now as the team leader. That's a lot. Are you a coach on the floor? That's a lot. You're asking me to drop 28 and defend and be a coach. It's hard to be a number one. Devin Booker last two games when Chris Paul's limited, worst plus minus in the series. He's never lacked talent. But I think Devin Booker is a little bit of what the league is now. The most talented I've ever seen it. Everybody can shoot. Everybody can put the ball in the deck. A lot of guys can. But I don't see the leadership. And listen, Chris Paul, Lakers' Suns don't play till Sunday. So they got some time here to get Chris Paul healthy. But what Phoenix looks like without Chris Paul being as effective, they look like Phoenix the last couple of years where they're talented. We're not doubting Booker and we're not doubting DeAndre Ayton. I'm not doubting any of these guys. But I think we have a leadership problem in the NBA. We don't have a talent problem. We don't have a coaching problem. I watch these games. These dudes are doing stuff now. It's insane. I remember last time I went to a dunk contest. It was in Los Angeles on a rainy weekend. We had guys jumping over cars. cars, automobiles. Like talent's not the issue. But when Chris Paul's off the floor, this is why I said he deserved to be the MVP. He's an old guy. You know, D. Wade, multiple years in college. Chris Paul, multiple years in college. Steph, multiple years in college. There are exceptions to everything. But Phoenix looks a little bit rudderless without Chris Paul directing traffic.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Jim Jackson joining us now live. So you called the game last night. You know, it's funny, Jim, because you got a little bit of both. You grew up going to the high school program, and then you grew up, and then you went to college for years and years. But at the end of your career, you dealt with a lot of what I'm talking about now as guys that just did AAU, you're a college. And I think you're uniquely qualified to talk about this. You broke into the league, everybody was old school. By the time you left the league, it was becoming a little bit like, dude, you played, what, 30 games of college? And when I look at Phoenix without Chris Paul, I just see a bunch of talent. They feel a little rudderless to me. Or am I a little too much here?
Well, no, I mean, the core, you got to look at the core part. Mikal Bridges had time in college, 3 years, you know, at Villanova. Cameron Johnson had his time at North Carolina. Devin Booker is an anomaly. I mean, and DeAndre Ayton, because of the two main guys are the ones that weren't in college, you know, only 1 year. Now, I mean, there are a number of teams, too, in the league where the leadership aspect, you're correct on that. Because they don't have it. A lot of talent, but guys that don't know how to lead. And that's always been the case in a lot of different, I would say, eras of basketball. It just so happened in the era when I came in and even before, because the league was older, you always had that leadership and mentorship.
Yeah.
On the sideline, coaches, so to speak, but also the players. So when I came into the league, it was like Derek Harper was my mentor. Okay, when I came in. Terry Davis, these guys that had been in the league for a while. You know, it was just like, okay, these are the do's and don'ts. This is how you become a professional. This is how you get through the daily grind, 82 games. But they also led by example because they had been in the league 6, 7, 8, 9, you know, almost 10 years. Okay. So it is a big difference. And that's the juggle that you have, Colin, when you have the leadership being young guys who didn't really have to carry a lot of the load in college.
That's right.
Okay. For a number of years, not just one. Learning how to be a number one on the big stage is totally different. Kobe had to go through that. Kobe wasn't automatically the best team leader, okay, because he went to high school. He didn't have to carry that load for 2 or 3 years and what that felt like, how to get guys really involved to win and win big in college. He got right to the NBA, and he had to learn and mature, and that still took time.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting with the Clippers tonight. I said this. Everybody loses in the NBA. It's no big deal. Mm-hmm. But when you get humiliated, that's when guys lose their job. If the Mavs beat the Clippers tonight, it's going to be a sweep. And, you know, listen, we know the Clippers' history isn't great. But there was never really any big expectations. It was brief with Chris Paul. But this team... those are big expectations. Yeah. So when failure coincides with expectations, that's when you get humiliation. And I look, if the Clippers, this could be the biggest game in franchise history. If they do not win tonight, they're going to get swept. Jim, you've been around this league a long time. That kabloom. Mm-hmm. I mean, this thing is, you think Paul George and Kawhi are both gone, one gone? What do you see happening?
Well, this is a little bit closer to me because I covered the Clippers all year. So I got it. It wasn't the same as being on the road, traveling with the team and kind of sitting down with the coaches and players and really getting insight and getting the feel. But by covering the games all year, I got a really good understanding of what this team is made of. And my the biggest trepidation I've always had was when things get tough, who's the voice of reason?
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing because your two best players are probably your most quietest players on the court.
Yeah.
I think that's part of the reason why you go and get a Rondo, because his voice is loud because he's been there, done that, and guys really respect him. Yeah, this is a critical game. And the reason why is because Dallas, you got to think about it. You go back to the bubble last year, they felt they had a chance to beat this Clipper team. Okay. During the course of the year, it was a huge blowout. First game the Mavs played the Clippers. It was over at halftime. Okay. Mavs were up 50 points. During the year, the three games the Mavs won, two out of the three. Luka averaged 30-plus points. Luka's going to get his numbers, okay, in this league, Kyle. You can't stop Luka. You can try to make him less efficient, but you can't stop him. What's killing the Clippers defensively is Tim Hardaway Jr. being able to get a shot. The first game, Dorian Finney-Smith. Now, part of the game plan was to leave some of those guys open and force them to make shots, and they did that. But in the last game, I mean, it was, you know, Jalen Brunson. It was Tim Hardaway Jr., guys that you know that can play. Those are the guys that are beating the – Luka's going to beat Luka. And if they lose this game, I mean, all heck is going to break loose in regards to, you know, just the panic of what the future holds for this Clipper team. I really do believe that.
By the way, Anthony Davis is much better than Rasheed Wallace, but I made the comparison about a week ago. I said when Rasheed was dialed in and aggressive, he was a handful. He went toe to toe with KG and Duncan for years. He could defend. He could hit a three. Mm-hmm. He was about 70% AD. And I watched that third quarter last night. And you know the story where AD was a guard his junior year, then he had a growth spurt. And I'm watching him last night shoot, move, fluid, put the ball on the deck, and I'm like, man, the guy upstairs gave him so much talent. Like, I watched that third quarter, and I thought, nobody in the league's going to beat that. Nobody in the league's going to beat that team. Do you think LeBron's ever frustrated that he has to cross his fingers to get that AD?
Well, I think the league is frustrated because AD is so talented. I'm going to back up a little bit. I played with Rasheed, okay, in Portland.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, Rasheed was the number one player coming out of high school. This was talent. But Rasheed didn't really care about being a number one. He didn't care about making all-star game. When he wanted to turn it on, he turned it on. It was to blow my mind because he was so talented, could dominate. He could be a perennial all-star, one of the best power forwards to ever play. But that wasn't his motivation. He loved to play the game the way he wanted to play it, which is nothing wrong with that. I see a lot of similarities with AD in regards to the fact that when he wants to turn it on, he's virtually unstoppable. But then he'll go through those stages where he just wants to be kind of one of the guys. And he has too much talent for that. But, Colin, here's the thing. A Lamar Odom, my guy I played with in L.A. for my last year, kind of the same way.
Yeah.
6'10", talented, uber talented, could dominate, to been one of the best. But that wasn't – I don't know if that was his motivation. And I don't know how you get a guy, a man – to do it when it's not built within him. And that's the challenge that you have when you're the Lakers. That's why you have to have somebody else around Anthony Davis in order to carry those games and those days when he's not really going at it. Because like you saw this in that third quarter, but also in game two at the beginning of the game, that AD makes this Laker team virtually unbeatable.
Yeah. So you did the Knicks-Hawks game two, and the Garden was crazy. Mm-hmm. Here's a dilemma if you ran the Knicks. Julius Randle's an effort guy on a championship team. I think he's your third best player. But you can't take him out of here. You got to pay him something because he's the soul of the team. He's a grinder. Mm-hmm. He's tough. And I look at it and I think the Knicks are going to be in a little dilemma. Where we're seeing the reality of Julius Randle in the playoffs, he can disappear for halves, a lot. But you also, he is really deserves, I mean, he's a comeback player of the year. So, and all of a sudden that contract's coming up. What do you do with Julius Randle if you're the Knicks? I mean, you want this momentum to keep going, Jim, because, man, it's kind of attractive. I watch the Knicks now and I think, well, if I was a free agent, that'd be kind of fun. Like the Knicks are back.
Yeah.
What are realistic expectations with Julius? What do you do with him going forward?
Well, you can't discount what Nate McMillan has done defensively to take Julius Randle out of. Now, it's a lot easier, Colin, to defend a Julius Randle, a power forward, than it is a Trae Young, a Steph Curry. You know, guys that have LeBron James, guys that have the ball in their hand and are on the perimeter, can shoot and step back and do a lot of different things. It's a lot more challenging to take away things. With a Julius Randle, you can shrink the court. You can take away driving lanes. it's things you can do to minimize his effectiveness, and that's what they've done. So I'll give Atlanta a lot more credit for that than Julius Randle not being able to perform. But moving forward, keep in mind, New York has a wealth of money that they can spend, okay? They need to have a viable point guard. Derrick Rose is great, but Derrick Rose is 12 years in the league. He's your secondary point guard option. In this league, you need to be able to surround a Julius Randle with a point guard that can make plays and knock down shots, okay? That's the direction that the Knicks have to go. I love what Julius Randle has done. The growth in this young man has been incredible, not just from a game perspective, Colin, but in his mind, because last year he wanted to be number one. He got paid to be number one, but he didn't understand what that meant. This year he's bought into, it's not about me and my individual goals. It's about how good I can be to help the team continue to get better. And that's the kind of attitude you want. You can't get rid of that attitude. The thing the Knicks have to do in the organization is surround him with the right guy. And if that's getting an alpha number one at that point guard or shooting guard, you try to go find them to complement the young players that you have.
Good stuff. Jim Jackson's been doing the Lakers and the Knicks. Exciting weekend ahead. You have a great weekend. Smoke a cigar for me and hit a golf club, would you, buddy?
Well, I'm going golfing right now, Colin.
I kind of guessed that. I had a feeling that was the answer.
Yeah.
All right. Jim Jackson, Fox Sports. A lot of stuff today, scratching the surface. Hustler Turf is one of the largest manufacturers of zero-turn lawnmowers in America. From May 17th until May 31st. Hustler Turf is donating $13 for every lawnmower sold to the Folds of Honor. That's a nonprofit organization.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
LeBron James has lost a lot of finals, but it's not necessarily humiliating. I mean, even when he was swept by the Golden State Warriors, well, that was KD and Klay and Steph and Draymond. Many of you think that's the best team that's ever been. I don't. I think the Chicago Bulls are better. I think, you know, Shaq and Kobe are probably better, Magic, Kareem, but I do think that Warrior team is one of the four or five best basketball teams ever assembled. But the Clippers, this is humiliating. If they lose tonight and get swept, it's the first round. The best player for Dallas, a 23-year-old kid. They don't really have a second star, and the Clippers wanted to play the Mavericks. That's why they tanked at the end of the year. And when you add expectations to anything, you go from disappointing to humiliating. And so when I look at this Clippers team, this is when owners blow stuff up. It's not just losing, but it's losing swiftly, first round, to a Dallas team that is ascending. They're not supposed to beat the Clippers. Clippers won 47 games, resting Kawhi and Paul George for 20 games apiece. I mean, Luka played almost every night. Hardaway's playing almost every night. And they're winning 42 games. So, you know, there is a reason, public speaking, they've done studies on this and polls on this. Public speaking is the number one fear of people. Not even dying. That's two. Jerry Seinfeld used to tell a joke about, it's amazing that death finishes number two to public speaking. So if you go to a funeral, you'd rather be in the casket than giving the eulogy. Like, people are petrified. Why? Why are they petrified of public speaking? Because you can embarrass yourself. 40% of America, 40%, never leaves the area code in which they're born. People don't want to put themselves out there. They're safe, content, live a nice life, don't take big risks. Big risks can be big swings and misses. So, you know, Bill Buckner, that was humiliating. It changed his life. Chris Webber, the timeout in college. Like Cubs fan, remember he interferes with a baseball. Like, that stuff borders on, like, that changes you, it changes the franchise, it changes the venom and the anger to fans and owners. The Chris Webber timeout, the Steve Bartman ball, that kid's gone into hiding. Nobody's seen him in 15 years. You start losing in the first round, getting swept by Dallas, Steve Ballmer's going to get humiliated. It's humiliating for Ty Lue. Those executives in the front office, the Clippers have a huge front office, and they're highly compensated, making more than their Laker counterparts in many instances in the front office. It's ugly. and ugly changes the temperature of the room and stuff gets blown up and owners don't like it and owners' rich billionaire buddies are poking fun at him and it's like, nah, and it doesn't work. So this is, to me, this is the biggest game in the history of the Clippers. Next game, game three Mavs. This is as big as it gets.